As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to Stars Matter, a recruiting podcast from The Athletic. I'm Mitch Light, joined by Ari Wasserman. And Ari, today we welcome in Sam Kahn, the Texpert at The Athletic, and a repeat guest on Stars Matter. Sam, how you doing, buddy?
I'm great. I'm truly honored to be a repeat guest here on Stars Matter. I feel like it's a major accomplishment in my career.
It is, but it's growing to be less of an accomplishment because we're having more repeat guests. But you're our favorite repeat guest so far, Sam.
Do you tell that to everybody who's a repeat guest?
Ari? Let's just say hypothetically.
Yeah.
I lived in Dallas. And I worked at The Athletic for 5 years before and was promoted into a position where I'm a national reporter.
Okay.
And then they hired somebody.
This sounds very unlikely, all this stuff.
And they hired somebody and called him the Texpert when I lived in Dallas.
How's that supposed to make me feel? Would you be offended?
I was not offended because Sam Kahn's a G.
Yeah.
He really, it truly is the Texpert. He knows more about Texas than he's forgotten more about Texas than
you,
I know about.
You are national. You are a national recruiting reporter, national college football reporter.
And everything I do in Texas, you be he offended. Leads me in. Like this guy has been, he is my favorite guest because I think outside of you who helps me tremendously every day through my, I don't think that anybody as my coworker has helped me more than Sam has, like with leads and ideas and thought processes and phone numbers. So I wanted to personally thank him for being on the show. And like, I do think that we have a really interesting discussion to have today. Last time we just talked about Quinn Ewers and we can pick up from where we left off and just go another 45 minutes on Quinn. But I think we have some other things to get to first.
We will talk about
Quinn before this is over with.
Yeah, no doubt. And we are going to lean on Sam today. We're going to talk about how Eli Holstein's commitment to Alabama affects Texas. And it does affect Bama, of course. But we're going to talk about what that does in the recruitment for a young up-and-coming prospect from New Orleans. We're going to talk about Jimbo's comments last week. We're not going to spend a ton of time on that. It's kind of old news, but it happened.
And Andy and I have discussed it in this feed like 9 times.
Yeah, it happened the day after we recorded last week. I want to get Sam's thoughts on Texas Tech and what Joey McGuire is doing on the trail. You got to check out his story today at theathletic.com. Really kind of a deep dive on the process of Texas Tech's recruiting. We're going to have trivia. And if there's time, we're also going to dip into the mailbag. So, but I think the big news of the week was Eli Holstein committing to Alabama, 4-star quarterback from just outside of Baton Rouge. This had been a rumor for a long time, and it happened. He pulled the trigger yesterday. Ari, why don't you jump in first? Because your take wasn't a hot take. It was an obvious take, but
people didn't like it. Believe
really?
It or not.
It was like you could argue that was like a bigger day for Texas than it was for Alabama.
That was what my column was. I don't know if you read it, Sam, but the comments were like, you're reaching here.
I did read it. And I just thought to myself when I read some of the comments, like people just want to get mad about something.
Do you agree with me or do you think I reached? It's okay if you think I reached.
I mean, of course I agree with you because I'm coming to this from the Texas perspective. what Alabama does is largely irrelevant to me because I worry about what's kind of inside the state border here. So
it's also so good that it's boring.
Yeah. And so to me, that was the first thing I thought when Holstein committed. I'm like, oh, wow, there goes one of the primary competitors for Texas in the Arch Manning race. So essentially it makes it a two-horse race. And yeah, that to me was an interesting part. I mean, certainly interested by Holstein because he was, you know, former A&M commit, super talented guy. I think, Ari, you mentioned it. Some people would argue that perhaps he's a better prospect than Arch. At least some people have. I have not seen them both, so I can't say that, but some people have certainly floated that idea. But no doubt a high level prospect, and that's a good one for Alabama. But definitely, if you're Steve Sarkisian, you probably are happy that it fell that way because now you have increased your chances for Arch.
Now, Ari, I would have told you if I thought it was like an overly hot take that, you know, not that you couldn't have written it, but I would have maybe pushed back a little bit. But the fact that, you know, Sam's saying he looks at it from a Texas perspective because he's our Texpert. I look at recruiting from a national perspective, and the first thing that I thought of when Eli Holstein committed to Alabama was like, wow, this is good news for Texas. And I think a lot of people who aren't fans of either one of those schools or are fans of Texas probably had the same reaction.
Yeah. The comments are very not positive.
Not so nice.
You know, I don't know. It's okay. And I understand, too, that people aren't going to view it my way. But like somebody, the first comment was, wow, what a reach. And like 96 people liked it, which is a lot of people. And it's like, I didn't really feel like I was reaching. I feel like Texas needs him the most. And if they need him the most and Alabama is quote unquote out of the way, and I don't know if we can definitively say that because I wouldn't be surprised.
I think he's still scheduled for a visit to Alabama.
Goes to visit there and ends up at Alabama. Would anybody be like, oh my God, I cannot believe that? It's Alabama. Like they could go recruit anybody they wanted. So it's just, to me, if Texas is actually going to land this guy, it would be the most influential single commitment in the history of recruiting. Not just because he's the highest rated player and the biggest hyped player in the NIL wet dream of anybody who has an advertisement to sell, but like also because Texas like needs him the most. You read the story, so you know the stat here, but Texas has not had a first round offensive player in the NFL draft since 2006. Think about that.
Can we copyright the phrase NIL wet dream, by the way?
I mean, like if you have money to spend and you want an advertisement, I mean, Arch Manning was created in a scientific lab to be the most marketable high school athlete in the history of all. Like there will be nobody better than him at this. And he's not even taking any money for it right now. Like you could not create a more marketable high school player. 6'5", New Orleans, curly headed, good looking quarterback who's a 5-star player, number one overall player in the country, who's in also happens to be in football royalty.
And if he goes to Texas, he could be joining.
Quinn Ewers had a mullet, and right, he was right. Supposedly made $100 million on kombucha tea. His last name isn't freaking Manning. This guy's name is Manning. What could you like create? I challenge both of you right now to create a prospect in your heads that would
Tom Brady has a son, right?
If Tom Brady had a son and he was as handsome as Tom Brady, and he was like, where does Tom Brady even live? Does he live in Massachusetts?
Probably, I think so.
Because the fact that he's from New Orleans also puts him right in the hotbed of the SEC,
right?
Like, it's like you add all these like things together, and it's just like Arch Manning was literally a scientific experiment for NIL.
No, he wasn't literally.
Don't say literally, yeah.
No, he's literally a scientific experiment handed down from the first family of football and like the fact that he also is a senior in the first year that NIL's even passed, like you can't make this shit up. So I love
college football.
It's amazing. So I don't know what we were talking about. Oh yeah, Texas. They're gonna get that person is going to end up at a place that hasn't developed a first-round NFL draft pick on the offensive side of the football since Vince Young. I was in high school when Vince Young was recruited.
All right, that leads me to my question for Sam, because we don't know when Arch is going to commit. We think it's later rather than sooner. And this is sort of an unanswerable question, Sam, but how important do you think it is for Texas to show progress this year?
It's critical.
They can't be a shit show offensively.
No,
right?
Absolutely not. No, you can't go 5-7 again, certainly. I mean, you got to – I think if you go 8-4, and I don't know that Arch is going to wait to the entire season. I don't expect this is going to be somebody that comes down to signing day. I mean, we don't know for sure. Obviously, he hasn't put a timetable on it. Nelson Stewart, his high school coach, has not put a timetable on it. The thing that stuck out to me, Arch said this, 247 wrote a story on him. I think they went over his first spring practice or earlier this month. And Mark Roach wrote this. This is, quote, Coach Sark's first year with a whole new roster and was with a whole new roster, no one he recruited. It's definitely hard to go in and be successful. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do this year. That's kind of my deciding factor there and building a relationship with them. Because we know one thing. We know Sark and AJ Mill, we have done a really good job of building a relationship. He's been there multiple times. They've pulled out the red carpet for him. Everything that, you know, you ask Nelson Stewart, he'll tell you they've done everything really, really well at Texas. But that last sentence, that's kind of my deciding factor, is what they do this year. That is the key, is if he's going to go there, I think early in the season, you're going to want to see some on-field progress in terms of wins and a confidence that you're going in the right direction as a football program to cast his lot with Texas. I think that's the big key for them.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he's, as we've mentioned, considering a 5-7 program, not all 5-7 programs are created equally. Obviously, Texas has the ability to kind of climb up the food chain pretty quickly in college football because it is Texas. But yeah, it's fascinating. And Ari mentioned in his story that...
Who the hell are they going to lose to?
We'd be fools.
I ask myself this every year and they lose half their games. It's weird.
Yeah, it happens every year.
They're playing Alabama and Oklahoma. Who else are they going to lose to? Oh, I don't know, half their schedule?
Baylor, TCU, Texas Tech?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Ari, you mentioned this in your story, I believe. We'd be fools to discount Georgia. Still one of the great recruiting outfits in the country.
Yes. Love that word.
Yeah, it's a Bill Landis word.
And didn't he say that Athens was his favorite college town so far that he's visited?
It's my favorite college town, too.
Well, clearly you've never been to Columbus.
I have been to Columbus. Athens. Columbus is a city. Athens, Georgia.
That was the joke. Thanks for catching on.
Have you been to Athens?
I've never been to Athens, but I'm going with Andy in the fall. I'm excited about it.
You're going to go see REM?
What?
Do you know who REM is, Ari?
It's a band that old white men like.
Well, that's right up my alley because they're my favorite band of all time.
My old mentor at my last job, Doug LaMaurice, would always talk about REM. And it's like, dude, they haven't had a single since like 1974. Like, what are we talking about right now?
Do you like Elvis? He's been dead since 76. So, I mean, that doesn't mean he's not good.
Well, he's not good anymore.
Do you like REM or not your bag?
I mean, I know they're like big time, like radio heavy play hits. I didn't dive into listen to them in a big way. I don't have a feeling one way or another. Like,
okay,
the songs that I've heard of theirs are good.
To quote Ari, what are we even doing here? I mean,
I don't even know what their hits are.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about recruiting.
You disgust me,
Ari.
It's like you have Alabama and Georgia as opponents, and one of those falls off. It's a monumental day, but you still have the other one. Like, you know, funny thing about it is that Texas has, like, which team has the easiest path to the field? It's like some might think, well, they have Quinn Ewers right now. Why would he go there? And it's just like, well, didn't Georgia sign?
Was there any Brock Vandegrift buzz? Like, he's a guy, you know, maybe just because Georgia's signing 5-star quarterbacks all the time, you know. I don't know.
We also got Gunnar Stockton last year, too.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think we've had our Georgia State of the program yet, but I'm interested to see what their quarterback's coming back this year. But he's got 2 5-star quarterbacks.
Is Stetson Bennett starting for Georgia again?
I would think so.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if Georgia lost Brock Vandegrift again over the same thing that happened with Jake Fromm? They won a national title, so it's different, but it would be hilarious if they lost another 5-star player who was like an all world type talent. And then he ended up going somewhere else and then winning the Heisman or something, because that's like the most Georgia's thing in the entire world. But like, I don't know that there's a clear path anywhere that he wants to go. So, I know that Florida is a school that I think might get an official visit. And it seems
LSU
like Florida,
possibly
LSU potentially, but like, what does he live like an hour away?
Yeah.
So I don't want to like close the book on everything. And Florida has been kind of a sneaky program that seems to be outwardly in the mix a little bit. It's not like he's like, this means he's going to Texas. It just seems like Texas was leading the way even before Holstein committed to Alabama. And now you have Nick Saban out of the way. And it's just like, wow, that's a huge step closer to landing this guy. And like, I just don't, I would love to be a fly on the wall in a Steve Sarkisian meeting room of just like, what are you even selling this guy, that you put some quarterbacks into the NFL 5 years ago? It's like, or, you know, maybe he wants to be the savior of Texas's program. I don't know. I don't know what he wants, because he doesn't talk to us, but it just would be really fascinating if he ended up there, and like what that would mean for Texas's program overall.
Well, I think that's a big part of Sark's pitch is, you say 5 years ago, but he's got a long history of guys going back to USC, you know, Matt Leinart, Carson Palmer, Mark Sanchez, you know, obviously the guys at Alabama, Tua and Mac Jones. So he's got a pretty good track record of developing quarterbacks. And obviously Sark was a highly successful college quarterback himself, you know, was tremendous at BYU. So I think obviously there's some degree of being the savior of the program and taking them into the SEC, like they're going to be there. So I think that is I think those are all key pieces of that pitch. And you know, a lot of it too is going to be, like I said, what they show on the field this year, that it's going to be really imperative upon Texas to show some real on-field progress this fall.
Yeah. And it was a different era, but keep in mind that Uncle Eli went to Ole Miss, not exactly an established power. I mean, Texas's production or on-field production hasn't been great, but it's got a better history than Ole Miss. And I'm looking the 4 years prior to Eli enrolling at Ole Miss, they went 8-4 in the year before, 7-5, 8-4, 5-6 in the 4 years. So that was now he had obviously all those family ties, but that was a big leap for Eli to go to Ole Miss. Thoughts, Ari, on my excellent point?
I mean, it seems like he wants to pave his own way, and he doesn't want to go to the same places that Peyton or Eli went to. So that kind of gives you a little bit of a sense of like, hey, I don't want to, you know, just follow in somebody's footsteps. And I guess going to Georgia or Alabama would literally be following in somebody's footsteps, because every year they have a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback or a national title quarterback. So if he wants to go to a big time program that will, it's moving to the SEC imminently and needs a savior to the program. And, you know, I don't know what Quinn Ewers is or isn't going to be, but it seems to make sense to me now. If I wanted to go to the NFL and be developed and reach all my dreams of what my uncle's accomplished, I don't know that Texas would be the most attractive place for me to go, just based on the history of the program. And it's like, I don't know. Like, you go back and look like Carson Palmer and Matt Leinart. It's like, when those guys were playing, how old was Steve Sarkisian? And like, what was his, he was the quarterback coach in 05 and 06 or whatever it was. You know, how much credit does he actually like get? Like, if I were some kid's dad, and like my kid was a 5-star quarterback, and Sark's like, yeah, dude, I helped develop Matt Leinart. I was like, what? This is 20 years ago. You're like 12. What are you talking about? You're the quarterback coach, and you coached under one of the greatest coaches of all time. What are you talking about? Like, that wouldn't even count. That wouldn't even register to me.
By the way, Ari, how soon you forget. When I first started editing you, you probably wrote that Quinn Ewers was the savior for college football in the world 100 times, and now you're like dismissing him, ready for the next best thing.
I'm not dismissing him at all. I'm very, very curious. I've got mixed reviews on him, actually. So I'm very curious to see what, you know, I've heard good things and bad things about how he's doing there.
All right, I will say.
What has Sam told you off the record? What is Sam telling you about?
What are you telling
me
off
the? You know what? I didn't text Mitch. I told you I was going to text him, but he was getting married that weekend. But
you didn't.
He doesn't care.
You think that I care?
You want Quinn Ewers information?
You have Quinn Ewers. You have Quinn Ewers. Gotcha. Wait, I'm going to be spending the rest of my life with her.
You know, we had the last time I was on, we had this long debate about Quinn, and I was like, after seeing him live in person, I was like, okay, Ari's right. I get it.
Yeah,
I get it.
That's like, what he told me, Ari. That's
like, I think I'm on board with he should probably, you know, if he's up to speed on the playbook and the offense in the fall, then yeah, I think if you're Sark, you got to start.
I've heard that is a problem.
Yeah, and that's the playbook
issue.
Yeah, the understanding of the playbook, reading defenses, and all that stuff,
which is something that we just, as casual fans, don't know.
I'm not
It's hard to know unless you're in the room. So I can't say one way or another.
I watched that kid throw and the ball speeds off halfway through the.
That's the thing. It is the thing. It's the physical talent that he has.
Yeah.
Like, it is hard not to fall in love with that.
Then if Sark's so good, then design an offense where it doesn't have to figure anything out. Just throw the ball.
Right. I just don't know that I like view of all the quarterback gurus in America right now. Like, I don't feel like Sarkisian's the guy that I have to play for.
Right. Well, no, I get that. I don't know.
I think he's on the short list, but I think his track record
is really good. Like I said, you just go look through all the guys he's coached. He's coached a lot of really good guys. Now, I guess you can say, is it a chicken or egg thing? Is it the talented guys that he had, or is it Sark doing it, or is it a little bit of both? It's probably a little bit of both. It's probably had really talented guys, and he's probably done a pretty good job with them.
Am I forgetting somebody that he coached at Washington and recruited by himself and developed by himself?
Did he coach Jake Locker? I'm trying to remember. I cannot remember.
We have to get a hotline.
I'd have to look that up.
I just would be curious to know. He did coach Jake Locker.
Yeah. So I would be curious to know if that's another one that was an NFL draft pick.
Handpicked a quarterback at either of his two stops as head coach before this. Developed that quarterback, and that quarterback became a first round pick under his guidance.
Locker, if he, you know. I assumed he recruited him too. We could look that up. But all right, let's move on. Sam,
so Jake Locker is like the sales pitch to get the number one recruit of all time?
No, but you're the one that's in the weeds on that. I'm talking about the entire body of work, the entire list of quotes, because you know that's he's probably trotting that out there in this pitch is look at all the guys I've coached and look at all the draft picks that I've coached. That's how the game, you know how it is. That's how the game is played in trying to convince guys. Like, hey, look at how many.
I know,
you
know, the Manning family is seasoned.
True, but still, ultimately it's the kid's decision.
Yeah,
and so you're trying to sell the kid, and so
I mean, I'm not trying to come down on Sark. I mean, if they get him, it's like an incredible recruit, like amazing. I just don't like. I feel like if Nick Saban and Kirby Smart and Ryan Day. Were all recruiting me, like Sarkisian would not be the guy like, oh, I'm going to go play for that one because well, he's the
co- that's fair, but he doesn't have to battle all those guys. He has to battle Kirby Smart and Georgia Saban. Right now and maybe Nick Saban if Arch still keeps him in the mix. So that's the whole thing is it's down to just really two schools, maybe three, but
yeah.
Texas is in a really good position right now. Clearly.
So Sark was at Washington from 2009 to 2013. Locker was there from 2006 to 2009. So
he didn't recruit him.
Oh, he
hasn't had a single draft pick in his entire career that he recruited and developed on his own.
Well, he hasn't stayed at places.
I was going to say he wasn't in Alabama long enough to do that. And then USC, obviously we know how USC went. So he wasn't there that long. So
I mean, but when he was
the assistant at USC, he was there long enough to have been involved in recruiting guys.
Yeah.
2014 and 15 where he was head coach.
Who was the starting quarterback at USC when he was the coach there?
They all blend together. I mean, we could.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I think people get my point. Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
All right, let's move on because Sam went to Vegas over the weekend.
Vegas, and
not for the same reasons that Ari goes to Vegas so many times.
I'm going to Vegas on Saturday for one night.
One night.
That's one what night I did. Only. I did one night.
All right. We can find about next week. We'll hear about your trip to Vegas. All right, Sam, just tell us why you went there, what you learned, and it seems like a pretty cool event.
Yeah. So there's this clinic for personnel and recruiting staffers. It was actually very, very basically called the Personnel Recruiting Clinic, Spring Clinic. And Lucas Gauthier and Geiske Crowley are both their personnel folks at Colorado State and UNLV has started this clinic, and they did it a year ago, and it was very small. It was post-pandemic. Las Vegas was one of the first cities to open up on the West Coast, and They wanted to get some personnel people behind the scenes, recruiting folks together to just do some professional development. And you know, I think they had like a few dozen people there last year. This year they had close to 100 and about 30 plus schools represented. And I had found out about it because there's a Twitter account called FB Personnel that Brian Spielballer, who works at Tracking Football, runs, and he hosts these Twitter spaces where he invites personnel people from out of the country for one-on-one interviews and Q&As on a Twitter space. And it's really fascinating. I've learned a lot through all these, and they've been promoting this clinic, and I started seeing the list of schools on the clinic, and there's a lot of Power Five schools, a lot of Group of Five schools, some FCS schools, and I said, hey, this might be really cool to go to. So I went, and they sat around for, you know, they had a social on Friday night. They had a full day of panels and roundtables on Saturday and talked about a lot of the current events.
NCAA, were you the only media member there?
I was the only reporter there. So I just asked them, I was like, hey, can I come and hang out here and be a fly on the wall for this thing? And they're like, yeah, come on down. They had it at Caesar's Palace, and it was a really cool setup. And they talked a lot about the current event stuff, like initial counter limit rules. You know, the portal obviously is a big topic, and all the different recruiting challenges that are coming, you know, whether it's NIL or the recruiting calendar, possible changes and things like that. So a really, really fascinating look and some a window into what the behind the scenes people in recruiting who deal with this stuff every day are really dealing with. And it is a lot, because obviously we've had some massive changes in recruiting over the last 3-4 years.
Anything surprise you?
I think not really. I would say that overall, the fact that people were pretty willing to be pretty open with each other about how they do things was pretty cool, because AFCA is kind of that for coaches. Like, coaches go to the AFCA convention and share stuff. And the idea behind this was like, hey, let's get recruiting people together for something similar that's a little bit smaller in scale. But recruiting is so competitive because it's a zero-sum game. If you get a guy, I'm not getting that guy. And so it's not like sharing X's and O's. But I thought it was pretty cool to see that you know, staffers were being willing to be candid about, hey, here's the issues we're dealing with on our roster when it comes to managing our rosters, or here's the issues we're dealing with in the portal. A lot of candid conversations about what this initial counter limit's going to do is it's going to make it easier for coaches to cut players, just plain and simple.
Something we have not talked about in this podcast. Why don't you go into most of our listeners, if you're listening to a recruiting podcast, you probably know of the rule and know what it means. But why don't you explain what that means real quick?
Yeah. So right now you're allowed to sign 25 guys a year. Actually, it had been 25 guys per year you could sign in your signing class. And then it was last year that they added seven. They say added, so you can add up to seven more signees in a year if you lose that many in the portal. So if you lose three in the portal, you could add three more. If you lose five in the portal, you can add five more. If you lose seven in the portal, then you can sign seven more. So you could sign up to 32 if you lost seven in the portal. And this was a way to help teams like your Kansas of the world who fall behind on scholarships to refill their rosters. Well, now for the next 2 years, the NCAA says we're not going to have there will be no limit. You can sign 30, you can sign 40, you can sign 50 if you want, but you have to stay under the 85 scholarship limit. And so that's going to make it easier for first-year coaches to flip their roster and sign 40 guys. But also, I think a lot of the personnel staffers I talked to there said they're concerned that some of these higher-end programs are going to use it as a way to just churn their roster and say, hey, okay, we recruited this guy 2 years ago. We missed on him. He's not going to play. Let's push him out the door and go get a guy out of the portal.
Well, sorry for the interruption, but while that in general stinks for the kids, obviously, doesn't that help the rest of college football as you go down the food chain? If they're pushing more guys out, that's more for the middle tier Power Five schools to grab.
In terms of talent distribution, yes, but for the kid,
right?
Because if at the end of the day, if we remember what we're doing this for, is like, hey, this kid's coming here to play football and get a degree. If he wants to stay and you're like, well, we're not going to have a place for you, that's kind of shitty, to be quite honest with you. And so there's a lot of people who are a little unnerved by that, and folks that I've talked to and listened to there. But there's also people that understand that there's going to be coaches that are more cutthroat and they're going to be willing to do that. And so that's going to make interesting.
And it also is happening now already.
Yeah, it's happening now. Yeah. But now the initial counter limit allows you to do it to a deeper degree. At least right now, you can only bring in 32 guys if you lose guys, but and I guess you can wiggle it around with the counting forward and counting back, and everybody's always trying to find a loophole and to add guys. But now this removes all of those guardrails and just like, hey, if you want to run off 40 guys and bring in 40 new guys, you can do it.
I'm old enough to remember an older signing.
Real quick, Ari, that should, in theory, should hurt you as a staff, because if you're recruiting against that staff, you say, hey, they like you now, but they've run off 65% of their roster over the last 2 years. You know, we've only lost 20% of our roster. That could help you in a head-to-head battle. Ari, what were you going to say?
I just think it's funny because it's like oversigning again. Remember when that was like a huge hot-button issue? Of like, oh, well, Nick Saban and Alabama are so good, or Les Miles, they signed 50 guys, and they run off half their roster, and it's just like, now it's okay again. You know, it's like, I feel like everything in college football is a cycle.
And from what I heard, I guess just talking to people, there's part of the reason why they pushed this through as quickly as they did is because there were a handful of schools, not just Kansas, but some other schools that were in the 60s and were struggling to get back to 85. And the only way to get back to 85 was to allow this. And that there was some concern that maybe those teams were going to be in really, really bad shapes going into fall camp in August. So I understand that part of it. And that's the challenge of the rule, is you're going to help those schools that really, really need it. But the schools at the top of the food chain are going to be really able to exploit it and be able to run kids off.
But it's not permanent, just indefinite.
Two years right now. Yeah, it's the next 2 years. So, and it's very early.
I mean, part of it, too, is the pandemic, right?
Yeah, that's part of it, too, because the COVID year happened and right in the after 2 years after the portal. And then we also had one-time transfer come in, all this. So all this chaos has happened in the span of like 4 years. And it has created a real challenge for people to manage rosters, and it has also actually created some opportunities, some jobs, because now you have people hiring somebody on their personnel staff just to monitor the portal, or you have personnel staff breaking up college scouting and high school scouting. Like, we're going to have one part of the department recruit high school recruits and one part of the department recruit other college rosters for the portal.
Yeah. And we've heard stories like this, and it makes sense that part of the, you know, is just opening up more spots for high school kids who are getting squeezed out because programs are filling their spots with the transfer portal. But, you know, I know some family, you know, my son just graduated high school. So we've got a lot of family friends at some of the private high schools here in Nashville that are kind of like FCS or low FBS prospects in football. I was talking to one about a month ago, and he's just like, yeah, he ended up signing with an FCS team. And if you would have told me a year ago, I'd say that guy's definitely a MAC or a Sun Belt type prospect, but it just says it's really rough. It's tough sledding out there. There just aren't the spots because of the COVID year and the lack of numbers.
Yeah, I talked to an FCS director of player personnel yesterday, and he said, yeah, we're starting to find higher in high school prospects fall to us because of that reason. Now, there is a plus side to the no initial counter limit, because you're going to have schools that say, okay, we really love this high school kid, but we've got to take this guy out of the portal. And you may, in the current landscape, are putting those two guys against each other, where now you can take both if you want to. If you want to take your portal guy to fill your need, but you're also like, hey, I love this high school kid as a developmental guy, you can take both now in this initial counter world. But there's no doubt that high school and junior college recruiting has been severely impacted by it. And I think you're seeing the group of fives and the FCS schools benefit from that in some way, again, able to get higher end high school kids and higher end JUCO kids.
Yeah. And no one steal this idea. If you're listening and you run a sports operation that covers recruiting, but Antonio Morales,
just talking to you on three.
Yeah. Antonio Morales. And I think Ari, you might be helping out with this because you love to collaborate with people, especially Antonio. I did the research. There are fewer junior college kids signing with Power Five schools this year and last year than there were 3, 4, 5 years ago, and it's because of the trickle down. Ari, any questions for Sam about his Vegas excursion?
What was the best meal you had there?
I ate whatever was at the two events. So I ate at the social on Friday night, which we were at Beer Park, which is a rooftop bar right across from the Bellagio, and so I just ate what they served us there. I did see the fountains. They were pretty cool. I really love the fountains. I've seen them on Ocean's 11, but to see them in person was kind of cool. And then on Saturday, I just ate what they served us, which they had, I guess, the hotel, Caesar's Palace, catered the lunch. So
he was there to work, Ari. Okay.
I ate a salad. You know, believe it or not, and I don't know, Ari might get mad at me and be very disappointed in me, but as I walked back to my hotel on Friday night, I walked through the casino. I stayed at the Mirage on Ari's recommendation, by the way. Great recommendation, solid hotel, really slept like a baby and enjoyed that experience.
A recommendation within the price range that the company
would. Correct. Correct. Correct.
I'm not saying if you go to Vegas, you have to stay at the Mirage.
I would have loved to stay to the Caesars, but that was way out of the Athletics budget. So
now the Caesars rooms in the Mirage rooms are similar. You didn't miss out much.
Yeah. So as I walked back to my hotel room in the Mirage, I walked through the casino and the tables were kind of calling me, but I was so tired from flying in that day and doing the social that I went to bed without putting a dollar on the table. And for the first time, I've only been to Vegas twice. This is the second time. Last time I gambled quite a bit. This time I gambled not at all. I went in there and slept like a baby, woke up, went to the clinic, and then flew back home with all my money in my pocket. And Ari, you might be sorely disappointed in me on that
one. It's okay. I understand. Not everybody has to be as big of a degenerate as I am. I do think that if you would have been at the Mirage 3 years ago, they used to have a Carnegie Deli right by the entrance from Caesar's Palace, but it closed, unfortunately. I do think that it is insane that they are knocking that place down.
Yeah, I don't. And apparently, it's going to turn into a Hard Rock, I guess.
Yeah, you know the big guitar Hard Rock hotel that's in Miami or South Florida. They're making a guitar.
Interesting. So,
the Mirage is a Vegas institution, man. That's where Vegas.
That's what you said. So that's part of the reason why I kind of enjoyed staying there, and I really liked it. It was a great place, and I would have loved, I actually did consider at one point going to a sports book and putting like a prop bet down for the fall or like a futures bet down for the fall. But like I said, I was just had I been there an extra day, I would have. But I was only there for really 30 hours.
Yeah, a dad. You had a flight. You were working hard. I get it.
Yep. And I had a blast. Honestly, I had a blast nerding out about recruiting stuff with all the personnel people around the country. So,
yeah. What are you going to Vegas for, Ari, this week for one night?
One of my closest friends' mom is having a surprise retirement party in downtown Vegas, and I'm going to that party to like surprise.
Is that
her.
A tough sell to get away from?
Britain to get away baby, from
the fam, like did she like?
I mean, I'm not going to get away from party, my baby.
But like, I don't know, just with a young kid, I think it's sometime you got to draw the line. Like, no, you can't go to your friend's.
Well,
mom's
it's funny
party.
Enough because Sam probably bumped in, but my wife was in Vegas for 5 days last week for work, and I was with the baby alone. So okay. You know,
I know, but
we got
me,
good
I heard,
teammate.
I heard the horror stories.
Yeah. No, she was sick before she left. The horror story was that she was sick, not that I was alone. I do think that I'm not even staying in a casino this time, and I'm sure I'll find a way to gamble on something. But also, my buddy that I'm going to hang out with for the night is a huge New York Rangers fan. Ooh. And as a result of that, I like put a bunch of money on the Rangers to win the Stanley Cup. And I'm not a big hockey person, but they've been playing awesome. So we're going to watch that game together at a pool somewhere, which will be fun. And I just love Vegas. I think it's the greatest city in the world.
One of these days I need to go with you, Ari.
Oh yeah, you will.
Maybe next year come to the clinic. We'll go a day
I will come to the clinic next year. Well, the reason why I didn't go to the clinic is because my wife was also in Vegas, and there was nobody to watch our baby. I couldn't have left, but I should have brought the baby to the clinic.
Yes, I'm sure that would we would have loved to hear her opinions on the transfer portal.
Yeah.
All right, Sam, you published today a story on Texas Tech recruiting. If you follow the stuff closely and you go to 247 team rankings, everyone's noticed that Texas Tech has been number one or they've been number two. In the recruiting rankings, I don't think even the most fervent Texas Tech fan would admit that they're not going to finish with the top five class, but they're still doing some good work. And you didn't just report, hey, this is a good class. Kind of did a deep dive on their process and their evaluating. And speaking of Arch Manning being created in a lab for NIL and being recruited, I think Joey McGuire would be recruited in the Ari Wasserman lab for a head coach. The way his focus is on recruiting and the reason he was hired was because of his focus on recruiting.
Or definitely a Texas head coach, being a former Texas high school coach. Yeah, Joey's done a great job, but he, put together a really good personnel staff, put together a really good staff of assistant coaches. But I was fascinated mostly by their process. Is they are basically following the Baylor model, which they adopted from Matt Rhule. When Joey McGuire got to Baylor, and then James Blanchard, who's his director of player personnel at Tech, he was at Baylor with them. Brian Nance, the director of scouting, was at Baylor with Rhule also. Rhule was very specific about, we want these certain athletic metrics for our players. And that is going to filter down to even to your two-star and three-star and even no-star type players. And we're going to take a gamble on guys who maybe sometimes don't have the best tape, but have all the athletic profile that fits us. And trust our guys to develop them. And then you saw the result was Baylor's draft this year. They had six guys drafted and they lit up the scoreboard at the NFL Combine. So that's kind of Joey's vision in terms of evaluation. And then the other thing is that they've been very early on guys. They were first on Calvin Simpson Hunt, who Ari will go see here pretty soon. Calvin Simpson Hunt is a four-star prospect. Now, he was uncommitted and I believe unranked when Texas Tech offered him, but now he's got 25 offers, including Alabama, Notre Dame, and Ohio State, and he'll take an official to those latter two in June. But they've been ahead of the curve on a lot of guys because McGuire has given James Blanchard and that personnel staff the green light to say, hey, if the guy fits the profile and his background checks out and the film looks good, offer him. He doesn't even have to, Joey McGuire does not even have to approve the offer. Now, Blanchard will tell him, he'll shoot him a text or he'll pop us in his office and say, hey, we're going to offer this guy. But Joey's given his guys a green light to say, hey, go offer anybody that you know that looks like what we want. And so that's
not common, right? In the industry, that's not common.
No, most places, and it's changed. Ari, you can chime in here because you know also about this, but I think traditionally it used to be, you identify a guy, position coach has got to sign off, coordinator's got to sign off, head coach has got to sign off. I think as roster management has gotten a little bit more fluid here with the portal and so many things going around, I think head coaches are more willing to trust their coordinators and even their position coaches on those offers. But sometimes they're still wanting some approval. But Joey's just like, hey, I brought you guys. I brought in James Blanchard, who's been at Baylor, who's been at the Carolina Panthers. I brought in Brian Ansel, who's been at Baylor. I brought in Sean Kenny, who spent multiple years at Alabama. You guys know what these players look like. I'm going to trust you that you know what they look like and that you can go get them. You don't need to ask me. If we all know, we're all on the same page of what a Texas Tech football player is supposed to look like. And so it is a little bit uncommon. I think Cody Belair, who was their director of scouting, who left in April, called it a player personnel guy's dream to work for this place and to have that kind of green light to offer at will.
Yeah, I think that the problem that you will find with places like this over the course of time is that Joey McGuire's entire advantage as Texas Tech's head coach is that he has the love and admiration of the high school coaches in the state. Is that a fair?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Absolutely.
And their whole game is to offer guys who have a look about them early so that they can say that they believed first. And that's also correct, right?
Yep.
So what's going to happen, if not now, but in the next 10 years, if this continues, is that they will have a class or two where they take early commitments from guys like Calvin Simpson Hunt, and they won't develop the way that they're supposed to. And they will be stuck with a bunch of players in their class that aren't good enough to play at Even Tech.
Yeah.
And they're going to find themselves in a position where they have to decide, do we take guys that we know won't play here because we don't want to upset the high school coaches, or do we throw people back and risk upsetting the high school coaches, which then puts Joey McGuire in a position that he's not in right now, which is on the bad side of somebody. So that might, maybe Texas Tech will be able to avoid that because the whole point of having the staff that he has and the connections that he has is that he can trust coaches to say, hey, this guy's for real and this guy's not. But Joey McGuire is not the first person to try to offer in-state kids early. And a lot of times what happens is they end up with classes that are very bad because they can't sever relationships with players they took early commitments from and stop developing. So like there is like this is also a very, very good thing for them. And I like what they're doing. And of course, like if Calvin Simpson Hunt ends up there, then you found a guy that has an Alabama offer before anybody. And that's the entire name of the game. But I find that it is very hard to sustain over a long period of time because projecting what a 13-year-old or 14-year-old boy is going to turn into is a very hard thing to do, as it turns out.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that makes sense or not, but it is kind of like walking a tightrope of, we want to be early, but don't be too early and don't throw out too many offers because you're going to get commitments from people immediately. And you don't want to put yourself in a position where you have a class that's half full of guys who can't play at the Power Five level.
Right. No doubt. And that's a great point. I'm glad he brought it up because we talked about that a little bit. I talked with, or at least talked with Cody Belair, their former scouting director, about that. And so there's two things on that. Is one is that's part of the reason why they're adhering strictly to these metrics. Like the way James Blanchard told me is like, if you're an offensive lineman and you can't dunk a basketball, you're probably not getting offered by us.
I like that line. That was good.
Yeah. Yeah, because we want to know that you have the explosion. If you don't have 33-inch arms, you can't dunk a basketball, then we're probably not going to offer you. Same thing with track times. Like, if you're a receiver or corner, you got to be 10.9 or lower if you're a junior. You got to be 11.5 or lower if you're a sophomore. So that they're going to adhere pretty strictly to that. So that's the number one thing. And so the reason why, and so back to your point about, hey, what if we have these guys with these traits, but they miss because they didn't learn football and they didn't develop? And I think the way Cody Beller put it to me was, if we cannot coach him up, if we can't get him developed, worst case, we've got a fast, long guy out there. But if we have a guy that is kind of so-so, not quite meeting the traits, but has great tape, and he doesn't turn, he doesn't figure out, and it's we can't get him, then you are screwed. You are screwed because that guy is not fast and he's not long, and also he couldn't figure it out. So that's why they're going this way. And then the other part of it is
you always want to err on the side of athleticism.
Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. And again, I mentioned this in the story. This is not rocket science. Everybody's trying to find big, fast, long guys. Everybody is. It's a matter of, if you're like Alabama and Ohio State, don't have to take a risk on a two-star that's got maybe five-star attributes, but the tape isn't there. And that's where the Tech is going to try to find their edge, because they can't, they do have to take risks. But the thing with the high school coaches is, Joey said, and Joey and I talked about this last night, was he has tried to make it very clear with high school coaches that, hey, yes, we love you and we're going to keep these relationships, but we are going to have our criteria and we're going to stick to it. And that it is not personal if we don't take your guy. And so that is going to be the interesting part of it to follow, because again, his staff has all those connections. He has all those connections, but that's what he said straight up. He goes, he feels like he's done a good job of not trying to do favors for guys and say, hey, we're going to take this guy because, you know, I love you and I trust you and all that, but he may not fit the athletic exact profile for us. And that's going to be the contingent upon them, is to be disciplined in that strategy and stick to that, as opposed to, you know, wavering on it from here and there. But I think all your points are valid. And I think you're right, Ari. It's going to be a challenge.
I feel like Nebraska had that problem, because Nebraska, you know, isn't Texas. It's a much smaller place without as much talent. But like Nebraska was getting beat by Iowa State and other programs around it for early offers and wasn't getting guys because they weren't the first to offer. But then they were afraid of offering too early and then ending up with a bunch of Iowa State guys. You know what I mean? So it's like this weird, and it's like a very hard thing to navigate. But Texas is a bigger state with more to choose from too. The one thing that I'm going to try to write about, and I'm going to read your story to make sure you didn't really cover this, but I wanted to get your opinion on it anyway, is what's the hardest part for Texas Tech? Is it to identify the guy early, use the criteria, see if the guy can stuff a basketball, get his commitment, and then that's the hard part? Or is the hardest part being right, and then all of a sudden finding yourself in a recruiting battle with Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, and Ryan Day?
Yeah, it's the latter. It's without question the latter. I think the identification part and getting them in the boat, especially if you're first. If you're first, it's easier to get them in the boat, because if you're the only Power 5 offer, or you're the only in-state offer, and that player wants to stay home, that puts you in a really good position in Texas Tech. But if you find Calvin Simpson Hunt, and Notre Dame comes calling, and Ohio State comes calling, and Alabama comes calling, it is hard. And you've got 7 months until signing day. That is hard to stave off for that long of a time.
One thing that I found interesting, Sam, and you talked about, and I'm reading this, and you said it's not rocket science, but they weren't shy about sharing their restrictions for their, you know, what guys need to run in the 100, the 200, and all this stuff. And they said that the thing that Matt Rhule prided himself on, and the staff is going to pride itself on, is kind of having the guts, I don't know if that word was used, but to take that two-star or that unrated kid and trust their own process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's the thing. It's because I think Blanchard used the example of JT Woods with me. Is JT Woods played, I think, behind Caden Stearns at Steele down near San Antonio. And Blanchard said that JT Woods didn't have great tape, but he had a great 100-meter time. He was 10.6 in the 100. He was 13.8 in the 110 hurdles. And so the traits were there. And he said, Blanchard, I think, told me, I didn't make the story, but he said, if I can watch him on tape and he can do five athletic movements that correlate to his position, and I can see him do that on tape, we can teach him the football and we can figure that part out. And then JT Woods ended up, okay, you know, reserve special teams guy first year, started part-time second year, third year, full-time starter, led the team in interceptions, fourth year, full-time starter, led the team in interceptions, second round draft pick. And that's a guy that only in-state Tech, Houston, and Stephen F. Austin offered. You know, and so that is the blueprint. That is the Matt Rhule blueprint, the Baylor blueprint, and that is essentially what Tech is trying to do with their guys. And of course, these are all risks. So it's not going to be 100%. If they hit more than 50%, they're probably doing pretty good. But it's a fascinating process to watch. And like you said, that was what fascinated me, is that not everybody's willing to give all the nitty gritty on what their criteria is. And so I love that they kind of gave me a little bit of an inside look at how they evaluate.
All right, we're going to move on in a second, but I'm going to write down our answers, all three of us, and we're going to have next summit, the loser buys a round or whatever. What is Tech's recruiting ranking going to be on signing day next February?
29.
I'm going to say 20.
Okay.
Whoa!
Ari, 29.
Sam. So is that a prediction that Calvin Simpson-Hunt is signing with Tech?
Yes.
Okay, I've got 24. I wrote that down before we started. So
29 might have been, but like I think 29 would be great.
29 is great. They've only been in the top 40 four times post Mike Leach.
Yeah, check out the fancy chart I made in Sam's story that kind of details the.
I don't think it's going to be 20, Sam.
Well, we'll find out. I also think USC is going to the playoff in the next 3 years, and you bet $1,000 on it. So.
I know. I put my money where my mouth is. Ask Antonio Morales. If people think I'm a hot take artist, hot take artists don't put money on it. hot take artists think things and just say it to upset people. I truly believe the things I say.
Ari, if they finish 29, that's still really good, because here's our last four years. 43, 74, 48, 62.
29 would be a great.
29 would be incredible for them. And that was my point at the end of the story. I said, if
20 they would be insane.
With a top 25 class. That is a huge accomplishment for Texas Tech.
I'm going to pull up something real quick. Mitch, you can ask the next question, but I want to pull something up. The team.
Okay, we're going to move to the mailbag. But
let me just say what I'm going to say. Teams that are currently behind or outside of the top 20 in the rankings right now, who will assuredly move in. We got Michigan's 21, Oregon's 22, A&M is 23, Alabama is 25, Clemson's 31, Wisconsin's 34, so they might jump up. Florida's 35, Miami is 36, Oklahoma is 38, North Carolina's 44. So there are a lot of teams that aren't even registered right now that are going to finish in the top 25. So for them to hold off all these programs is going to be kind of a tough battle to do. And like, listen, they've got twice or three times as many commitments right now as most of the other teams in the top 50. So, you know, you understand
the way the
formula works, but.
Yeah,
finishing in the top 20 means that they're going to hold on to Calvin Simpson-Hunt, and they're going to get somebody else. Because that, I mean, finishing in the top 20 is a hard thing to do.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Good list there.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, we're going to hit some mailbag questions first before we go to trivia. This is from Jonathan D. I'm going to say both of you guys, and I take
do
these
it for
from,
the Texpert. I love Sam so much.
Do these.
You got a nice smile too.
I appreciate that.
I take these from the mailbag.
I feel bad for taking all your airtime, Ari. I'm very long winded.
No. You're the man.
I think the people on the
feed are tired of hearing my voice anyway, bud.
Yeah. So stop talking. So those of you that submit questions to Ari's mailbag. If he doesn't answer them, a lot of times they're good. We're going to use them on the pod. This is from Jonathan D. If the Athletic did a sports swap and you were asked to write about another sport, what would you choose? Sam, you go first.
English Premier League. Really? I would love to do that. Although the bad thing about it is the access, you don't get player access, so that kind of stinks. But I don't watch it as much as I used to. But that's kind of like my secondary hobby sport. Like I love the NBA, but the NBA, I watch it so much that I'm kind of a fan of the NBA, and I kind of don't really want to write about it.
Yeah.
But I think English Premier League would, to go across the pond and go to Anfield or go to, you know, a game at Manchester United or go to a game at Liverpool. I mean, I already said Anfield, go to a game at Tottenham, which is the team that I have supported. Like that would be really cool to go and see all those atmospheres, because I think it would be kind of akin to college football in terms of what the passion is.
Definitely.
For the sport. So I would love
to. Can I ask you a question? Because I've never understood this.
Huh?
What? How do Americans pick what English premier team that they root for?
That, you know, one time, a long time ago, ESPN did a page two story like 15 years ago that did like a process of like how to pick one. And I'm sure you can find other articles a little more current than that. But I picked it because I picked Tottenham because I was watching them back in like 2012. And it was on ESPN randomly. I was watching them and they had a player named Gareth Bale, who's no longer there, who was really, really good. And I watched him and I was just like infatuated by how good he was. And I was like, that guy's pretty awesome. I was like, I'm going to follow this guy's team. And so he was there for like another year or two. And so I just picked, that's kind of how I landed on him. But
sometimes I also don't know how people like pick their favorite NASCAR driver.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea.
I just like that guy.
Yeah.
It's just kind of weird. Like, yeah. The sports are such a communal thing. You know, pick your team based on the city, you know, and the city pride and civic pride, you know.
Never understood. Before you answer, Ari, Sam, I asked Landis and Ari this last week. Are you aware of the book Fever Pitch or the movie?
I'm aware of it. I'm aware of it, but I haven't.
Not the Red Sox movie. If you like English Premier League soccer, read the book Fever Pitch by Nick Hornby. It's a nonfiction. It's about his passion for English soccer growing up, and that book does more to encapsulate what it's like to be a fan than anything I've ever read. Highly recommend it. So, Ari, what would your sport be?
Mitch is one for one on book recommendations.
Oh yeah, I hit a home run on that one.
He told me to read Under the Banner of Heaven. Have you heard of this book, Sam?
I have not.
I'll send it to you.
Okay. Awesome.
I've got two copies
need
now.
I also need to read The Club, apparently, which is also an English football book. Is that really good? Everybody says that's good.
Under the Banner of Heaven is about fundamentalist Mormons and murder that occurred.
Interesting. Good.
That's the second week in a row we've talked about it. So
yeah, I just finished the book.
Oh, good for you, bud. Proud of you. All right. So what sport?
Can't pick the NFL because it's the same sport.
No, you could pick. No, that's a very fair answer.
It's a very different sport from college football, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, like I just love football the most, but I feel like if I had to be a beat writer or a writer, I'd pick the NFL because I'd feel most comfortable like about it. But if I had to reinvent myself and choose a new sport, I think that being a golf writer would be a hell of an existence.
That's a great one.
Yeah, that's tough gig. Like, well, I guess every sport beat writer is a lot of travel.
And you have to be a great writer, and you really have to work on like it's like I feel like it's like a lot about prose. The way, I mean, like Brendan Quinn is a phenomenal just writer, and the way that he covers it is good. But I just feel like traveling to the most beautiful places in the country, you get to write about like some of the things that are the center of attention. Like I just have always like been like, God, what a day it would be to cover the Masters, the final round, you know. And there's a lot going on there, and there's a lot of access from what I understand, and it's not quite as, you know, agent this and trade here and all. I feel like just being a golf writer, you get to love the sport and go to the most beautiful places. And I feel like if somebody said, well, would you rather be the star quarterback of a Super Bowl winning team, or would you rather be the third best golfer in the world? I think I would pick golf.
If I could be an editor for another sport, I would pick college baseball. In fact, did you work with Travis Haney at ESPN, Sam?
Yes, I did.
So I was having lunch with Travis Haney just a few years ago when he was at The Athletic covering the Titans, and I was, you know, still working at Athlon. I was like, do you think The Athletic would ever cover college baseball? I'd really love to like spearhead that coverage. I didn't even thought about applying to The Athletic, never thought I'd work here and stuff, but it's a sport I love, and I think an undercovered sport.
You love college baseball.
I'm watching it right now.
Feel like college baseball is only like a thing for like 3 weeks a year.
Well, that's because you don't like college baseball.
It's not televised a lot.
Yes, SEC
it
Network.
Is now. Yeah.
It is SEC Network. It ESPN starts Plus, in February. Yeah. ESPN Plus. Every SEC game is on ESPN Plus or SEC Network Plus. Like even a random Tuesday game against Belmont for Tennessee or Vanderbilt or Alabama, whatever, is on. So
when I was at ESPN, I did get to do a lot of college baseball in the spring because usually before the transfer portal, we weren't covering a lot of college football in May. And in June. So I did some regional, super regionals. I did the College World Series in 2018. One of the best coverage experiences I've ever had. I love that event.
Yeah, it is great.
My first road trip as a reporter was to the Women's College World Series. I thought it was cool.
Very
good. Because Arizona had a badass softball team when I was in college.
Yeah, Oklahoma City, right?
That's right.
Oklahoma City.
Okay. All right, one more.
My first time I went to a casino, too.
Ah.
Wow. So
were you like Barney in The Simpsons drinking his first beer?
It's just like driving through Oklahoma. And I was like, oh my God, there's a casino in the ages 18 and above. And I was like, okay. That was my sophomore year of college. And then my junior year, I took an internship in Fresno with the MLB.com internship, but mine was minor leagues. So I just drove around California for an entire summer, but my home base was Fresno and there was a casino there too. And I had no friends and nothing because I was just living there for 3 months. And I just spent 80 hours a week in the casino.
my wife grew up on a farm in Michigan, like 10 miles outside of Battle Creek, basically in the middle of nowhere. And there's a casino on the interstate, like 7 miles from our house. And I've never been. I'm ashamed to admit, Ari, but it's.
I think playing poker is one of the most genuinely fun things a person can
do. I don't really know how, so I would be intimidated.
You're sitting in a casino, you got a little Coke to your left, you got a TV on.
Is it Coke or a rum and Coke?
Cocaine is what I meant.
Okay.
Wow. I'm kidding.
Wow.
I don't drink when I'm gambling because I like to be focused, but
okay.
I watch a baseball game or a football game on TV, sit there, got my phone, my headphones on, waiting, seeing cards. What a time.
I had a long poker run in my 20s back in the old ESPN Televising World Series of Poker days.
So I have this idea and I want to know what you think about this idea. And then Mitch, you will get the trivia, but you know, we can talk about off topic stuff too.
Yeah. We got one more mailbag question, but we've got time.
I've got a group of like four or five friends here that I've made because I'm still new to Dallas.
In Dallas. And
I have this idea that I want to create, and I think it should be more popular than it is. So everybody takes $1,000, okay? And that seems like a lot of money, but listen to my idea. $1,000, and you put it into a pot right after the end of the college.
It's going to be like a key party?
It gets really freaky. You put it into the pot right after the World Series of Poker, right? And then once a month or twice a month, you have a poker night at somebody's house, and 10 people bought in, so it's 10 grand total, right? And every time you guys play, you play a tournament, and you can play two or one, whatever you want to do, once a month or twice a month. And over the course of the year, you keep track of, if you win one of the tournaments, you get 10 points. You get second, you get 9 points. And you keep a running tally for the entire year of who finishes in these tournaments in your little home game. And then at the end of the year, whoever wins the tournament race between you and your friends takes the 10 grand that you guys have as a buy-in and buys a buy-in into the main event, World Series of Poker main event.
Interesting.
And then not only that, based on where you place. So if you place second, third, fourth, or fifth, that's the percentage of the cash out if the person places in the tournament that you get from the World Series cash out. So everybody didn't just lose their money. Everybody is staked on that person who's going. So if that person catches fire and ends up finishing 1500th or whatever and gets 9 grand, then you will cash out based on how you finish. So every tournament matters that you play. And I think that would be a blast and a good use of $1,000 a year. And then you all could go to Vegas and support your friend or whatever. That'd be great.
Good luck with that. I'd go to that Vegas and support you.
You don't think that's a great idea?
That is a fascinating idea. Yeah. I'm not good enough at poker to do it. Yeah. But yeah, that's a fascinating idea.
Okay.
I haven't played in so long. Once we had kids, I'd stop playing.
Okay.
One more question, because the trivia question is short. I think it's a good one, but it's short. It won't take that much time. Say you're a four-star. This is from Patrick S. Say you're a four-star recruit, more on the low end than the high end. So let's say you're the 325th ranked player in the country. Playing right away doesn't matter as much as development, in your view, and winning matters more than anything. Hypothetically, if you had an offer from every school outside the four or five elite programs right now, where would you choose to commit? So you,
USC.
Let's not include USC. Let's say outside the top, let's 10, whatever our list of 10 best recruiting schools over the past 15 years are. Let's just say it's not one of those schools.
So you're a really good football player who doesn't care about money, and you want to win the most.
You want to be developed. You don't care about playing right away.
I'll probably go with Baylor.
Wisconsin? Ari will go somewhere in the South because he.
I'd probably go to Stanford, bro.
But winning at a high level, they're not winning right now.
Winning
matters more than anything.
Are we talking about winning
more than anything?
Are we talking about winning relative to your league, or are you talking about winning a national championship?
But you can't win a national championship if you're
right. I would say just being a consistent winning program. You don't want to jump on board a program. Okay, let's say you love Arizona and you think that Jed Fish is going to turn it around, you're not going to pick that for this reason, because they haven't turned it around yet. So it's got to be a program that has sustained success. That's why Wisconsin would be on my short list.
Okay. I'm picking Baylor. Baylor's done a good job of developing guys. They've won the Big 12 multiple times in the last 10 years. Seem to have a good infrastructure.
So, like, I don't know, like, without putting a list, but, like, I would go to Florida. Does that count?
No, they're too good. But, again, that's just my perception. I think
Florida's
they've won big. National championships recently or in the past, you know.
Okay. Because, like, when he says without the top five teams, I think about Ohio State, Georgia. Right.
So I changed Clemson, his question a little bit. So maybe Florida would be a great
Penn State
answer.
Would be too good, too, then?
I wouldn't put Penn State. I would say Penn State would be maybe below the cut. I don't know. That's just.
I might go to Penn State.
Yeah, okay. That's a good one.
Then you can meet Bill. You could go back in time and meet Bill Landis.
I just think playing at Penn State would be as close to a big time atmosphere as humanly possible. That's, you know, competing at a high level and has a chance in the expanded playoff realm to win. If winning is your priority, I don't know that Penn State had more draft picks than anybody else in the Big Ten last year, so they're doing a very good job of developing their guys. But, like, to me, I view, like, Penn State and Florida as very similar programs right now.
Right now, I would say, yeah, but I just historically Florida, just because they've won under multiple head coaches.
And it's just like, but it's like crazy, because you also take out A&M because they had such a great class last year, but they've never won anything.
Right.
So it's like I would pick A&M, but they don't count either.
Yeah, they've been recruiting at top 7-8 level for last 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, right. Tennessee, maybe.
Yeah. I mean,
I'd want to go to a place that plays in a huge stadium and the fans are passionate.
Yeah, well, passionate's one word for Tennessee fans.
Yeah.
All right, trivia?
Sure.
Okay. Short and sweet. Ari, there's no number for you to get confused on. You're not going to like say 32.
This is the point of this where I get humiliated every week. So.
Yeah. It's not when you turn in your stories?
You think my stories are humiliating?
No, I'm just kidding. Okay. I love you and your work. Which Power 5 school has gone the longest without signing a blue chip prospect, meaning 4 or 5-star prospect?
Am I up first?
Well, either one.
Sam,
are you cheating, Sam?
No, I'm not at all. What's the question?
How could you possibly look that up fast enough?
No, which Power 5 program is that you said? Yeah.
I looked this up yesterday. Which Power 5 program has gone the longest without signing a blue chip prospect?
So it can't be a 4-star or 5-star.
No, yeah, right. They've not signed a 4-star or a 5-star.
And I feel like Kansas is the easiest layup answer, but that's wrong.
No, be incorrect. Stephen Parker, a couple years ago.
Iowa State?
Incorrect.
No, Iowa State.
I don't know how many 4-stars they've signed.
Well, it's been one recently.
Okay.
More than one.
Dude, this is a really good question.
This is a good
question. And a story. The answer to this question is a story. I'm looking at the list of all the Power 5 schools right now, and I'm very stumped.
Really? I figured if you looked at the list, you might get it. Because sometimes you just don't think of certain
Syracuse.
Schools. Nope.
That's a good guess, though.
You know, I didn't look up every school because I don't need to look up Alabama to find that they haven't done. But, like, Syracuse is one of the ones I dove into and researched.
And I know if Vanderbilt was the answer, you wouldn't have asked it.
Yeah. It's
not. Well, they just also signed a 4-star prospect in last year's class, didn't they?
Yeah.
Shit.
That's a tough one. That's a good trivia question.
I don't want you to tell me. I want to try to figure it out.
We might be here for 10 minutes.
Duke?
Yeah. Incorrect.
Ooh, okay. That's a good guess.
Am I going to be blown away by it?
I don't want to give any hints. If you're blown away by it, you shouldn't be doing your job. You shouldn't be a recruiting writer.
Well, I didn't know if it was like an answer that you'd be like, oh, wow, really?
It's Penn State. No.
It's not Penn State. Illinois.
It's not Illinois. If people read your stuff, they'd probably think you'd say Michigan. Sam? I'm not disappointed in Ari. I'm a little disappointed in you, Sam.
Yeah, no, I'm...
Wake Forest?
Incorrect. I thought that might be it when I started this.
Damn.
I think.
Hey, can you give me
a... My son's going there next year. Gabe's a 4-star.
How long is the streak?
The answer is 2017 is the last time they signed
5 years. It's not Texas Tech.
It is not Texas Tech.
I was going to say, I know
you should read your own story.
I was going to say, I just read that. Well, I was just thinking, I was like, I know they've only signed like a couple four stars since then.
Washington State?
Incorrect.
Oregon State?
Correct.
Oregon State. Wow.
Here's why, because I was editing Christian Capel's Oregon State of the Program, which will run tomorrow. And in the recruiting section, it says Jonathan Smith has yet to sign a blue chip recruit. So I thought to myself, that's actually interesting. Are they the program that's gone the longest? And it was, in fact, Oregon State. I think Washington State was maybe, there were several, I didn't write them all down. Washington State was one. There were several that was, maybe Syracuse was 2018 was the last one.
Is Oregon State the hardest job in America?
We've talked about this. I think it depends what Oregon is doing, but I think Washington State might be a little more difficult.
I don't think it depends at all what Oregon's doing.
You don't? Because they're not recruiting the same.
It's like not even the same league.
I think Vanderbilt may be the hardest job in the country, depending on, but when you factor in expectations, it's not. Look who you're recruiting. Look who you're competing against. Oregon State is had a winning
Vanderbilt
record.
Has like 25,000 things to sell. Oregon State just like, come here, maybe. Like what is Oregon
that's
State
on their
sales
recruiting
pitch?
Pamphlet? Actually, Jonathan Smith's
Vanderbilt's like, why don't you come hang out in one of the coolest cities that all these people come to travel to see all the year and get the greatest education of all time and play in the SEC? It's like, what's Oregon's? Oregon State, I mean.
Come here, maybe.
Come here like and drive really far away from the airport. Like what do you say? You never wanted anything.
They won 10 games when Jonathan Smith was a quarterback, or they won 11 games and Jonathan Smith was a quarterback in 2001.
Like Syracuse is like, come here and maybe you won't die in a blizzard. Like, I don't know, like what
that should be a story, Ari. You could, for all
Dude, let's do that.
You come up with the biggest wise ass recruiting slogan possible. Well,
should I actually do that?
Yeah,
I'll do that.
Okay.
Syracuse. We have Wegmans where you can get a hot meatball sandwich at the grocery store.
That sounds like a story. That sounds like an Ari column of come up with the wackiest recruiting pitches you can for all these.
I'm writing that down. Okay, since you guys
funniest
did not
but like what Alabama's just be like, come to Bama, we won't pay you.
We don't need to pay you.
We don't need to pay you. Kirby Smart,
so,
we're the new Bama.
So Since neither of you guys got it for 10 minutes, I'm guessing you don't know the player, the last four-star recruit they signed.
I couldn't even name a single player on Oregon State's roster right now.
The only Oregon State recruit I think I can name is Jacquizz Rodgers.
Yeah, well, you should read the story tomorrow then, Ari. You'll be well aware of it. Isaiah Hodgkins, wide receiver.
Never heard of that. Answer to the big question.
So. Cool. All right. Good show.
I'm going to go look at this guy.
Good talk.
Good trivia question.
Thank you.
Sam, do you like this podcast?
I do like this podcast. You guys are loose and fun.
Yeah, we're loose.
Yeah, this one was really good, I thought. It was more, you know, just a lot to talk about. And
Isaiah Hodgkins.
Yeah.
Hodgkins.
Where's he from? California?
California.
Okay. Now, they are not one of the programs. Another trivia question from months ago was named the X amount of programs that have not signed a five-star. Oregon State has signed a five-star with some big defensive linemen from Corvallis. So,
Arizona's never signed a five-star.
Right. Arizona, Purdue, Vanderbilt, Wake, Duke. I don't think Northwestern has. Is it Indiana? I did the research a while back. But
you want to know the funniest thing, too?
What?
When Oregon State signed the blue chip prospect in 2017.
Yeah.
It was their second consecutive season doing so too.
Oh, wow. So, but that's, you know what? That's a real testament to what John and Smith is doing. They've improved a lot and they have not signed a five-star. Yeah. They've not even signed a four-star.
They've been really good in the portal, haven't they?
Yes. In fact, and this is something we'll talk about over the next year. It's like we have to stop looking at just recruiting ranking, because Oregon State's recruiting ranking one year might've been in the hundreds because they didn't take many guys, like, because they
come to Arizona. You can go to Mexico for spring break.
Yeah. Come to Arizona, you can get the same degree as Ari Wasserman
and make a pretty good living doing what he loves. Like, I think Arizona set me up great.
Did you graduate in 4 years, or were you like a four and a half state school?
My dad, on the way to orientation, my dad's sex talk with me was on the way to prom, and he said, "If you have a baby, I'm not raising it." That was the sex talk. And
oh my gosh.
And on the way down to orientation for college, he gave me the flunk out of college talk, which was, if you take longer than 4 years, you're on your own. Those were my two talks with my father about the two most important things. So I did it in 4 years. And I actually took summer school classes when I didn't have to in order to have lighter semesters.
Yeah, I took summer school too.
Like I took I took an English class at a junior college before college, and it made my first semester of college super easy because I didn't have that like big tough English class that makes you write all these papers. And then I never took a math course.
That's clear.
My entire 4 years.
That would explain a lot about this podcast.
My dad listens to this podcast, and I feel like I owe him an apology or I owe him some money because I had a full tuition scholarship to Vanderbilt, but it did not cover summer school. But I just wanted to hang out in Nashville one summer and work at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. So I took a summer school class. So we paid, and this is in the early 90s, I think it was like $4,000 for a one summer school class. And which I really, in theory, did not have to take because...
Why didn't you just stay in Nashville?
Well, I did take, because I was the sports editor of The Hustler, the school paper, for two semesters. You didn't know the school paper at Vanderbilt's name is The Hustler?
I've read The Hustler. Not
No, the greatest thing would be like, we go, did you like my columns?
Yeah.
My column on Jerry DiNardo?
I can't be the first person that's made that joke before.
No, not at all. So I remember my freshman year, we went down to Auburn for a basketball game. And I said, Mitch Light from The Hustler, and the guy, like at the media credential place. And we used to do that on purpose just to get these people looking at us like The Hustler's covering an Auburn Vanderbilt basketball game.
That's hilarious. So, I've got a few copies of your paper in my childhood nightstand.
So okay. The point being that when I was a sports editor of The Hustler, I took 12 hours. So I need to catch up an hour, a course twice. So Sam, you okay there? It looks like Sam's digging in his drawers for some of my old stories.
Dude, I'll tell you what, Sam, podcasting with me and Mitch is going to be an adventure.
Yeah. So that's I'm surprised you didn't know that.
I didn't know that. No. Okay. What's the backstory for that?
It's found in like 1890. It's well before your magazine, The Hustler. I guess you're hustling for stories, hustling on the beat.
Got it. Is that what it's still called?
Yeah, The Hustler. I got right behind me, bound volumes. Hold on a second. Talk to Sam.
Oh, man. This is amazing.
I my entire career at The Athletic is just one ticking time bomb until I'm relieved of my duties.
Until you get a call from HR.
Yeah, just like,
oh, my gosh. That's incredible.
Is that, or those the, I guess he has like the bound copies of his.
When I was sports editor, they make you bound volume. So wow. one of my friends from high school calls me the Vanderbilt Hustler. So
wow.
Yeah. So
that is really cool.
All right, Ari, you want to take us home?
Yeah. Sam, thanks so much for spending time with us. You're always super insightful and love your work and your expertise in the state and nationally. Mitch, thanks for dealing with me for another week. And listeners, thank you so much for tuning in for the latest edition of Stars Matter. It's recruiting talk and Hustler talk, and you never know what you're going to get. Sorry if I offended you if you're an Oregon State fan. Please give us another chance next week. That was Stars Matter.